It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new book shows how Wisconsin has been a crossroads for people who changed the world.
In a collection of essays, Madison author Dean Robbins writes about dozens of these legendary people who left their marks on Wisconsin communities.
Some of these icons have been on WPR in recent years, like the late Native American trailblazer Ada Deer, children's author Avi, prolific writer Joyce Carol Oates, and Oscar-winning actor Willem Dafoe. Let's take a listen.
One of the most important things that I've done with my life is to help people become knowledgeable about their tribal responsibilities.
The whole focus of writing, at least as far as I'm concerned, is to write something that can be read.
I want everyone out there to look at themselves and figure out who they are and proceed on those paths.
As a writer, I like to experiment.
I used to go to the Viking Theater in Appleton, Wisconsin, and one of my favorite memories is going to see horror movies, to tell you the truth.
One of the big influences in my writing life is radio.
I liked Wisconsin very much.
Here I am talking with you as a proud graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
I love the city. I love the lake.
That was a huge part of my earliest cinema experiences.
And those voices were backed up by the iconic guitarist and inventor Les Paul, the Wizard of Waukesha, playing Wabash Blues on his Les Paul guitar.
Dean Robbins joins us now. His new book is called Wisconsin Idols, 100 Heroes Who Changed the State, the World, and Me. Dean, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Hi, Kate. Thank you so much for having me.
How did you decide whether a remarkable person had made their mark in Wisconsin and who to include?
First of all, they had to have a connection to Wisconsin, whether they lived here for a time, folks like Oprah Winfrey, Orson Welles. And then there were some unexpected choices of people who had a kind of important experience just passing through Wisconsin. That would be Joni Mitchell, Harrison Ford, people like that.
Where does this passion come from in wanting to find out these idols and these heroes and find why they made a difference in Wisconsin?
It's been a lifelong obsession. Ever since I was little, I've just had a pantheon of heroic figures, and I've always wanted to get other people emotionally invested in them too. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that is through storytelling. So that's what led me to be first a journalist and then a children's author and now an essayist with Wisconsin Idols.
You marveled at Harry Houdini, I think, since you were like 7 years old. What was it about Houdini and his story that kept your attention from the time you were a child?
Well, I started off idolizing superheroes. Mm-hmm. When I got older, I realized that there were real people who were kind of like superheroes, and Houdini was the first one that I discovered. I was watching an old movie called Houdini with Tony Curtis at my grandparents' house, and I couldn't believe that this was a real person, not a made-up character like Superman or Batman. And I would ask my sister to tie up my wrists and my ankles with bandanas so that I could wriggle out of them the way Houdini did. And when I moved to Wisconsin, in the back of my mind, I knew that Houdini had grown up in Appleton. So as soon as I got here in the 80s, I made a beeline to Appleton to walk in his footsteps on College Avenue and look at the place where he'd lived with his parents and check out the local history museum that had a bunch of his locks and keys and straitjackets. So Houdini is a foundational hero for me.
Coming into this conversation, we heard the music of Les Paul. Why was he the Wizard of Waukesha?
Well, ever since he was 12 years old, he played the guitar. He called himself Red Hot Red, and he was just fascinated with tinkering around with the guitar to see if he could electrify it. And he was actually the inventor of the solid body electric guitar. He started off with a railroad tie and two spikes. That was his first guitar. Then he built one out of a block of wood that he called the log. And he went on to be one of the most influential musicians in the world. He pioneered close miking and multi-track recording.
How did he learn to do that?
Completely self-taught. He was just an inveterate tinkerer. And that's why today he's in the Inventors Hall of Fame, as well as Musical Halls of Fame. in the 1950s with his wife, Mary Ford. They'd gotten married in Milwaukee. They recorded hits like How High the Moon and Tiger Rag. Where's the tiger? They were absolutely irresistible. The tiger. Has anybody seen that tiger? Mary is cooing, Here, Kitty, Kitty, Kitty. A song like Tiger Rag, it is impossible not to smile listening to a song like that. With Les's bright, chiming guitar. Mary's multi-tracked vocals. And Les is doing these yowing type of glissandos. So they became a huge hit. In the 60s, he developed his arthritis, and he lost some of his hearing, and it looked like it was curtains for Les Paul. But as you said, he was the Wizard of Waukesha, and he had another miracle left in him. He relearned to play to kind of overcome his disabilities. He went on to win a Grammy late in life, and he had this decades-long residency in Manhattan where a lot of his famous friends would come and sit in, like Jimmy Buffett and Paul McCartney.
Well, we are going to move to baseball. Legendary baseball star Jackie Robinson, notable for so many reasons in baseball history, breaking the color barrier in 1947. Can you tell us about why you included Robinson in this book about Wisconsin?
I idolized Jackie as a kid, and I'm an incurable fan letter writer. And I fantasized about sending Robinson a letter and getting a response back. Well, there was a kid from Sheboygan, an 8-year-old white boy named Ronnie Rabinowitz, who did that. And Jackie wrote him back. And his father and Ronnie went to a game in Milwaukee between Jackie's Brooklyn Dodgers and the Milwaukee Braves. And Ronnie called out from the stands to Jackie, "Hey, Jackie, remember me? I'm Ronnie Rabinowitz." And Jackie called back, "Oh, yeah, you wrote me a letter and I wrote you back. Stay in touch." Mm. And they began a lifelong pen pal correspondence. And Jackie inspired him in so many ways. He would share his philosophy of personal integrity and racial harmony. And Ronnie considered it a formative experience in his life.
We're moving to Wisconsin's own Emily Dickinson. And that first line in the essay really caught my eye. Who is this, Dean Robbins?
That is Loreen Nydecker. She lived outside of Fort Atkinson in a rough cottage with no running water, and she was utterly obsessed with writing modernist poetry. She had gone to Beloit College. She had to come home because there was illness in her family, so she couldn't finish college. And she just spent the next several decades honing these spare modernist poems that were not recognized for many decades. She had to support herself scrubbing floors in a Fort Atkinson hospital. But later in her life, critics discovered her, and she published some collections, and now she's considered one of the greatest poets in our country, much like Emily Dickinson had lived that reclusive life.
And apparently she drew inspiration from Black Hawk Island, the wooded island in the Wisconsin River.
She did. She was inspired by all of the bird sounds and the wind and the water sounds around her. Yeah, she just completely drew from the location that she was living in.
We are talking about the new book, Wisconsin Idols, 100 Heroes Who Changed the State, the World, and Me, with author Dean Robbins. Let's turn to a prominent jazz drummer from the village of Mount Calvary, that's in Fond du Lac County. The late Viola Smith is known as America's fastest girl drummer. Let's take a listen to a bit of her solo from a performance in 1939 with the Coquettes.
She's amazing, isn't she?
Yeah.
So she came out of tiny Mount Calvary. Her father owned a ballroom there, and she played in an all-sister band. It was called the Smith Sisters Orchestra, would travel around Wisconsin and play in vaudeville houses and in movie theaters. And as she grew up, one by one, her sisters dropped out of the band, but Viola, who was playing this instrument that was considered unladylike to play the drums at that time, mm-hmm. so this would have been the 1930s, she wanted to keep playing. And so she went off and formed her own all-woman band because it was very difficult for women instrumentalists to play in all-male orchestras. There was a lot of prejudice against them. And the Coquettes became famous. And Viola appeared on the cover of Billboard magazine. As you said, she was known as the fastest girl drummer in the world. She befriended great drummers like Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich and Joe Jones. And then she went on to try to help other women to give them a leg up when men went off to World War II and there were openings in all these male orchestras. She wrote an article for Downbeat magazine called Give Girl Musicians a Break, urging band leaders to hire these exceptional women musicians.
Turning now to the Wizard of Oz, which has a character who everyone probably remembers, not one of on the main four, but can you tell us about the famous Wisconsin connection to the movie and who was Meinhard Robbie?
Meinhard Robbie is an incredible character. So he grew up in rural Farmington, and he's a little person, and he was so isolated that he thought he was the only one like himself in the world. And as he grew up, he went to the Chicago World's Fair and discovered other little people who were working there. And he was overjoyed to find that there were others like him. And he actually joined in as a performer at the World's Fair. He was an extremely adventurous person who refused to recognize any limitations in his life. So when he graduated college, he had courses in diction. He had worked on his speaking. He did a lot of public speaking. And when he heard that there were auditions for this movie called The Wizard of Oz, and they needed little people, he made a beeline for Hollywood, and he tried out. There were 9 speaking parts. And with all his work, his hard work on his diction and his speaking, he received one of these parts.
As coroner, I'm a scoffer. I thoroughly examined her. And she's not only merely dead, she's really most sincerely dead.
Really most sincerely dead. He was on screen for 13 seconds, and he was famous for the rest of his life for this memorable appearance on screen.
Amazing. One of the most famous plays about the Jim Crow era, A Raisin in the Sun, written by Lorraine Hansberry, attended UW-Madison for a time. Can you tell us more about Hansberry's accomplishments and why you wanted to write about them?
Well, I think it's little known fact that this great American playwright who wrote a classic document of the African-American experience has a connection to Wisconsin. So she went to the University of Wisconsin for a couple of years in the 1940s. This would have been an unconventional choice at the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of Black college students went to historically Black colleges in the South. She chose to go north from Chicago for some reason to the University of Wisconsin. And she had a very memorable experience here. She befriended the white people who lived in her residence hall. She was politically passionate about civil rights. And she also experienced some depression here. She drifted for a little while until she happened to go to a play put on by the University of Wisconsin Theater Department called Juno and the Paycock by Sean O'Casey. And she was utterly transfixed by this story of workaday Irish people speaking in their natural poetry. The playwright didn't bother to clean up their messes or idealize them in any way. And this became the inspiration for her to write her own play, which took a similar approach to African Americans who were divided generationally and by sex and by education, that was A Raisin in the Sun.
Well, Dean Robbins, you're going to take us out on Nirvana, the legendary 90s band from Seattle. How did Nirvana come to make waves here in Wisconsin and in Madison?
Well, Madison happened to have a great producer named Butch Vig, and he had a tiny studio on East Washington Avenue in Madison called Smart Studios. And he was putting out hard rock kinds of music, and Nirvana happened to hear one of the bands that he recorded called Killdozer, and they thought, that's exactly what we want to sound like. So in 1990, they made the trip to Madison. to record in the studio. They were working on the songs for the great album Nevermind. They used most of the Madison tracks as a template.
Okay.
They moved on to Los Angeles to finish up the album. One of the tracks, Polly, ended up on Nevermind, exactly how it was played in Madison.
Dean, thank you for joining us.
It was so nice to be here.
Polly wants a cracker. Think I should get off her first.
That was Dean Robbins, author of the new book, Wisconsin Idols, 100 Heroes Who Changed the State, the World, and Me. We toured through some of those icons, including Kurt Cobain and his 90s rock band Nirvana. They worked on their legendary album Nevermind in Madison, and the song Polly was re-recorded at Smart Studios on Madison's east side.
Got some rope, haven't told, promise you, haven't true, let me take a ride, cut yourself.